Hello and welcome to this episode of the AF Mentors podcast. Today I am joined by all of the AF mentors. Maureen, how are you?
I am very well, thank you.
Have you got over your near-death experience yet?
Not like kind of, not fully. I'd be a bit cautious eating my breakfast now, I must say.
Like, I've been thinking about it quite a lot.
Yeah, I nearly died, guys.
But did that not happen to you with the apple a couple of weeks ago as well?
So the apple just got kind of stuck at the back of my neck. This
Yeah, what's
time,
wrong with your throat?
We've kept, my mother reckons now that I have like, what's the lack of saliva? there's some condition called I don't know how you pronounce it now, Sjögren's or something. It's where you don't have much tears in your eyes and you don't make much saliva. My mother and my aunt has it, and she's like, "I bet you have that now," and I'm like, "Oh great, just another thing to add to the list."
Well, don't you think what would help with that is just always drink, like always having a bottle of water when you drink?
I think you always need to be drinking, yeah. But the apple just got stuck. I could breathe, but the other day I full on blocked my windpipe. Like I was, I
I've
couldn't.
not known someone to choke that often.
No, but the apple wasn't choking. It was just kind of stuck. Like I had to get a knife and flick it off the back of my neck.
I was going to say, tell them how you got it out with a knife.
Yeah, I got a
what?
knife.
That, no,
I couldn't. I was drinking a load of water, like nothing would move it. I was coughing. I was doing everything that I possibly could. I had the finger back my neck and everything trying to move
Have
it.
you considered chewing your food before you swallow?
Yeah, that would be an idea.
Did you not
Genuinely,
consider
I've just got
a
this.
Spoon rather than a knife?
No, I didn't actually. I just thought
that's like Maureen's given herself an emergency trackie.
Yeah, sure. I am a bit of a risk taker. Like, I like a bit
well,
of fun.
You know what? That's bringing back who. This is one of the only shows I've watched. Now I can't remember what it's called. What's like the most famous doctor show ever? Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Remember when they had to put like a straw in someone's throat?
A tracheotomy.
Yeah, but was it on a plane and then they did it with a knife? No, or not a knife, a pen.
Oh, maybe it happened quite a few times.
I think it happens quite a lot on that show.
Yeah.
To be fair, it's like one of those like medicine tropes of someone being like, someone give me a biro, I'm gonna do a trachea on them, and you're like, that person is not coming out of this okay.
Yeah, because
I think I was watching that one with the pen with my brother, and he was like, you know, doctor, oh, because they'd really do that.
They wouldn't.
It's,
like,
it's a program.
Honestly, it's the same when I watch anything medical within. She's like, no, no, no. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Stop ruining it for everyone. Okay.
Are we ready to go?
Ready? Yeah, I think we're ready for the questions.
What do you do for yourself each week that means you're not pouring from an empty cup?
Oh.
I'm not a good person to answer this question.
James?
I was going to say, this is probably me, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like I am one of those people that's like boundaries, massive boundaries. If my phone does not leave the office in the evening, I try not to have it on the sofa with me. I don't like, I'll turn things like WhatsApp off. I'll have an app blocker over the weekend so that I'm not constantly bombarded by notifications. Like anything that really needs picking up, I can pick it up on Monday.
Do not get formal.
To be honest with you, like I used to when I first did it, when I first started being like, no, that's it, I'm stepping away from work. I had a good couple of weekends where all I could think was, everyone's going to need me. Like, it's going to be the worst thing ever. Everyone's going to need my attention, and what's going to happen when I get back? And after a couple of weekends where actually no one really cared that I wasn't there, I started going the other way and being like, oh my God, am I useless? And once I'd stopped crying, I then realized that actually it was probably a good thing that I was creating people that were self-sufficient and that they could handle it if I wasn't around for a weekend. So I think that was the one thing for me, was to create space for myself and then to start finding things that I enjoyed outside of work. Like, I love my job and it's so satisfying, but it isn't my be all and end all. It isn't my entire life. It's something that enriches my life, which is awesome. And so I get a lot of energy from work, but I also get a lot of energy from other things in my life, like just reading a book, like Twilight, for example.
So I'm gonna just pose a question here, just because this is quite a good example, and like working with both of you and actually having worked with both of you one-to-one, like Jules is very different to James, right? If I message Jules at almost any point, I almost instantly get a message back. So you might say she's got like quote unquote bad boundaries, right? But, and this isn't like, you'll see where I'm coming on this, James is more likely to burn out than Jules. And my point here is that, a couple of points, but it kind of reminds me of, you know, the data that shows that people who drink coffee late at night actually sleep better. And you're like, what the fuck? That makes absolutely no sense. Like drinking caffeine late at night, like would have negative impact on your sleep. And it's like, yeah, because only someone who could get away with drinking caffeine late at night, i.e. someone who already sleeps well, would ever think of doing that, right? So it's kind of the same. It's like, James probably has very good boundaries because he has burnt out before and he knows where his boundaries are. And that's why he sets these. Whereas like Jules hasn't burnt out because she's got a different personality, because, you know, like that she's, my point is there's no like real like one size fits all. And sometimes you can look at what people do and just copy them thinking it's just going to fit you and what you do. And actually you kind of got to figure out through trial and error what's going to work for you. And sometimes that does mean burning out now and again and being like, I need more time off. And that's not to say that that's right or wrong, because Jules doesn't have as much time off as me, or James has more time off than me. Like, actually, it's figuring out what works for you and how you like to live your life. And then on top of that, it probably also depends what else you've got going on in your life and what stage of life you're at as well. Like, boundaries might have been different for me at different stages of my life. And then if I had kids or something, that might look different again. Or you know, you have different phases where different things take a priority. And I don't think that's necessarily like a good or a bad thing. It's just like with kind of everything, there isn't this one size fits all, and this is how you should do X, and this is how you should fill up your cup. Because for a lot of things that are meant to like fill your cup, like Jules is the same as me, but like people are like, oh, you know, take some time off, like get your hair done. I could think of nothing fucking worse than sitting in a hairdresser. Like, that drains the shit out of my energy. I actually find it physically painful to sit for that long, let alone with back issues. But just like that does not make me happy. So sometimes when people are like, oh, do this, you'll feel a lot better, it's like, yeah, you feel better when you do that because that's like a pleasure thing to you. I hate it. Or if someone's like, oh, have a night out, I'm like, I could think of nothing worse than like blaring music in my face and like loads of drunk people. Like, that's my idea of hell. But it might be something that gives somebody else energy and they absolutely love doing on a weekend. So it's figuring out what fills your cup for you. And like, as boring as this is, I think for me, it's often like having a period of time, normally on a weekend, where I am not time constrained by anything. So like this Saturday, I actually had a fair amount of work to do because I did a little Commit to Six launch, but I had no time constraints. I had no calls booked in. I had no like scheduled things. I had a bit of a lie-in. I went to my favorite coffee shop. I sat for a bit, did a bit of work, went for a walk. Like, that was really chill for me. And that did fill my cup. And I did a bit of like pleasure writing, not just for like doing content. So yeah, my point is it can look different for everyone.
I think that's huge though. I think it's so easy to assume that self-care needs to be like wine in the bath.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, that's something that I always push back against when people say, oh, I'm really busy, but I'm doing all right. And I'm like, okay, cool. Keep doing it. Do what is making you, what is filling you with energy. If you're waking up in the morning and you're like, this is great, I can't wait to go, maybe that is filling your cup. But if you are kind of feeling like, I'm really struggling to maintain the momentum, then it's probably worth looking at what does make you excited and what does give you that energy back.
Strong agree. I also think periods of time of being bored is good. I think it was, I can't remember her last name now, Sinead, Irish influencer. Yeah. She'd put something up about this. And I mean, I've heard numerous people say it, but just because it was top of mind. So I saw it the other day and she was like, I turned off my Instagram for like 3 days. And she was like, do you know what happened? I got bored. And then she made a really good point. She's like, do you think like Jimi Hendrix came up with amazing guitar songs? Don't know if that's the right terminology, James. But anyway, like, do you think he came up with that while scrolling on Instagram? No, like, do you think, I don't know, some amazing writer, Hemingway, wrote something because he was always stimulated by external things, scrolling on Instagram or TikTok or something? No, like, you sit and you're bored, and that's when your ideas come. Like, if you even think about the best ideas that you get, you're normally driving, or you're walking somewhere, or you're waiting for a train, or you're in the shower or something. You're not scrolling through something. You're not constantly stimulated. You're not going from like, I'm going to shut my laptop and now turn on the TV. Actually, those periods of being bored is normally where you get most of your inspiration from. And there's such a drive now, I think, for like, quote, unquote, deep work. Like, oh, where can I be most productive in my deep work? And you also need space for like creative work and unstructured work that doesn't have that time constraint on it, so that then you can be like, oh, that good idea, that's what I'm going to do this deep work block on. But you can't have perspective and ideas and creativity while you're doing your solid, you know, whatever hour of deep productive work.
Creativity is such an underrated skill in our profession. I think a lot of people talk about creativity as like, oh, well, when I have time, I'll be creative. If we need creativity. If we don't have creativity, if we're always focused on something of how productive we can be or a particular task, we can't come up with the amazing ideas, or we can't find the perfect way to say something. I love my time being bored. And that's one of the reasons that I leave my phone in the office where I can. Because I know that I find it difficult to come away from scrolling Instagram. That's like a really big thing for me. And again, just like Emma was saying, knowing where your potential pitfalls are and knowing where your strengths are. If I know that I'm going to get sucked into that, I'm just going to move it out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Jules, what do you do to fill your cup?
I think kind of like similar to what you were saying, it's not one specific thing. Like, the thought of sitting in the hairdresser's kills me, because I told you what, a fortnight ago I was going to make a hairdresser's appointment. Have not done that yet. Will I do it before Christmas? No, because I don't want to go. But I've done other things that are business related that I find much more exciting. And I think that's what it is. It's the excitement. So it's something that you are buzzing to do that fills your cup. And just like for you and I, a lot of the time that tends to be work. And as you were saying there, it'd be good to be bored. And I'm like, yeah, we would just start another business though, so maybe not a good idea. But whatever you're buzzing to do is what fills your cup. For me, it does tend to be, I know that sounds a little boring, but it does tend to be work stuff. But
I wonder if that's related to like how much impact it can have and the excitement of that. Because like for me, I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know. I think sometimes people push back on that. Like, can't you just do something for the sake of it without turning it into something? But I'm more excited to, I don't know, like write a new program that could change people's lives than just like write for myself for the joy of writing or something. Like, I don't know. I think there needs to be, and I don't know whether that's partly an ADHD thing or how I'm wired or whatever, but if I don't see a reason for something, I really struggle to do it. If I see a reason for it, I very rarely lack any motivation for it. But if I'm like, I can't see the point of this, and I think it's partly why like I struggled at school a bit as well, or struggled to work for anybody else, if I'm like, this is a bad idea and I don't see any point in doing it, I just won't do it. Like, and same with like playing computer games or watching TV, I'm like, I can't see what the outcome of this is, so it doesn't really interest me to do.
But do you know, I think with our businesses, it's a wee bit like, you know, when you make someone a cup of tea, you probably get more from that than someone making you a cup of tea, because you're getting to share something. And I think a lot of people who say things like, oh, you should take a day off, go for a spa day, do this, that, and the next thing, they maybe come from like corporate jobs or jobs where they work for someone else, or jobs that literally they're not set on fire with excitement about. Whereas we all very much love what we do, and we've chosen this, we've not fallen into it. And I think that's a big thing to distinguish between, that when we work, it's because it's something that we've got a massive amount of passion for. Whereas a lot of people telling you to take days off and spa days and go away for the weekend are maybe in a job that they're just there because they need a job, as opposed to being super passionate about it.
Maureen, what do you do?
Oh God. Yeah, I don't really know. Like, there's no one specific thing as well. Like, I do like to take time off if I have something actually to do. Like, if I'm just taking time off to just sit on the couch, like, I will just like get so bored. Even though I do like sitting on the couch and watching television. But if I have the whole day, if I have actually something planned, like if it's like, oh, it's a really sunny day and let's go fucking, it could be as simple as cycling the bike. If there's activity involved, like I'm usually pumped to do that. But yeah, like sitting at home, like to fill my cup, I do find myself doing things that are related to work. Like I might sit in here and watch something related to something that I can use within my job, just because I want to or I'm interested on the topic, and I'll look shit up or watch videos on different things. And like that will energize me. I'll be like, oh, this is so cool. I'm so into this. And then I'll just want to learn all about it. Or I like just being able to go to the gym, as simple as going to the gym and not feel like I'm under pressure for time, to just be able to go in there and like, oh, I can just chill in here, do things that I enjoy and not be like, okay, I have this amount of time to get this much done. I like to just be able to go in and not be under pressure for time and do things that I actually just enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, we're all
Underrated.
pretty boring, right?
Yeah, well, to some people.
Is it answer to, but I feel like success is a bit boring.
In
Like
what
it, well, it's
success?
consistently doing the basics time and time again and being excited by doing the basics. Like I never met anyone who, and this is one of the reasons that influencer workouts don't tend to work. You know, when you see like someone posting a new workout routine every week, and it's like, well, there's no wonder these things aren't working for people because you're changing it all the time. And actually, the consistent stuff is the stuff that gets you the most results. So I would say the people who are most successful are probably kind of boring.
Yeah.
I've noticed that in business and I've noticed that in training. And when I say boring, I mean boring to the general populace as opposed to boring to me because I find it quite exciting. Like I get a kick out of those 1% improvements.
Yeah, it's all subjective. Like if somebody who goes out partying every weekend would think that we're boring as fuck. But at the same time, somebody who's out partying every weekend, I'm like you, Emma, I'm like, I couldn't think of anything worse. I'm like, please, no, don't invite me anywhere. I don't want to go.
It probably comes back to the comparison trap as well, isn't it? If, am I doing this wrong? Or but yeah, whatever like refills your cup is probably the best thing. I do think that everyone needs some time off. Now, for some people, that's 3 whole days over a weekend. For other people, that's a Saturday afternoon religiously, or like one day or whatever. Like, I don't think it's necessarily the length of time that matters. I've noticed this for myself, but it's actually being switched off. Like, normally, if I'm with Zoe, I'll take like the whole of Saturday off, or I'll like check something in the morning and then just shut my laptop for the whole day. And then I'll come back to it the next day. That gives me a lot. And it's only a day, you know, or it's like not even a whole day. But I think the actual switching off, and then you realize what James has found, which is that it's actually all right after one day. But what I will say, because sometimes people are like, yeah, see, and like, you know, like take 4 days off and like what happens? I'm like, a lot of fucking work piles up. That's what happens. Like, it's not, I think that that's the other thing that people who aren't self-employed don't realize. It's like when I leave my business and shut my laptop, nothing gets done. You know, maybe slightly different with the coaches and with Kimberly, but realistically, not, you know, I just come back to the same amount of work. It's not like when you go on holiday from a job and they're not just like, oh, we just piled up all the work that you missed for the last 2 weeks for you to come back to. And I know some jobs are like more like that than others, but they don't actually expect you to make up the time that you've left piled back in. Whereas you take a holiday as someone who runs their own business, especially as a coach, like you do just have all the work that you missed piled up to when you get back.
See, I think that's why working holidays into my pricing was so important to me because I do like you know we've already identified I am more susceptible to things like burnout and it's not just because I'm trying to do everything it's because I spend a lot of time worrying and through quite a few years of therapy like I've come to terms with that and I'm a lot better at it than I was. But when I was trying to figure out how I was going to deal with that, I was like, I'm going to need to work into a break into my pricing. So I don't actually have the backup of work that comes off when I take a week off because I've kind of settled it already in.
Yeah, it depends how your business is run, realistically.
That wouldn't work for you because
no,
I know that your business is kind of run straight the way through.
Yeah.
Whereas my businesses are very much set up on like 12-week sprints. Like 12-week sprint, 13th week off, 12-week sprints, 13th week off.
But like for me, a whole week off, like not checking my phone and not catching up with clients, it's not because I think something's going to go wrong.
I miss them. Like I massively miss them every time. But I think for me, I always, in my head, I'm always like, this is the point. The whole point of my coaching for my clients is that I don't want them to need me. So what I do with my clients is while they've got that week off, we're like, right, these are your targets for that week off. And when I get back, it's like, what happened and what didn't happen? Right, now we know what we need to focus on for the next 12 weeks. Like if you haven't done a single workout for the entire week because I haven't been there, because you feel like it's, if I'm not watching you, it's not going to happen, then that's a problem and we need to deal with that.
Yeah, not quite the same with online coaching, but yeah.
It happens with my online clients too sometimes. Sometimes they're like, oh, I just didn't do anything because, you know, I wasn't going to check in with you this week, so I figured that it was a week off. Like, oh, right, okay.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Let's unpack that.
Next question.
How long do you think podcasts should be? James,
is it
like
us?
Should.
It was more that it's like, is it us on a podcast? Because that will be long.
Yeah, we just got through one question. How long has that been? Like 25 minutes? Wow.
I don't think there's a set answer. I think it varies.
I've done 6-7 minute podcasts that have been really popular.
Yeah, I've got feedback from people who listen to mine who said they like the 10 minute, like 10 minutes is a good one. But then for a solo one, like 10 minutes-ish, 20 minutes. But then when there's somebody else with you, it's easier to talk for a bit longer. So I think 45 minutes is usually a good, well, this is what I've heard back, that 45 minutes is a good longer podcast to aim for, or that they like listening to. Probably would tune out after that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you've got like one point you want to make, especially if you're thinking of what we do with a lot of AFM coaches, which is kind of encourage people to build a bank of content. So if you've got one point to make, if you're like, I always get asked about, I don't know, metabolic damage. So I'm just going to do a 7-minute episode on bam, bam, bam. This is what you need to know, blah, blah, blah. Then, and you just want to cover that one point, because this is something I used to kind of like bulk out my episodes, and I'd be like, halfway through this one, I think I talk about something and then you forget and whatever. Whereas if it's just like 1 7-minute podcast, everything you need to know about metabolic damage, bam. That covers one topic very well. And I wouldn't make it longer just for the sake of making it longer. Now, if you want to go into loads of detail and it's a 30-minute podcast on metabolism, fine. But if you're thinking of like short, sharp, topic-based things, then I don't really care how long they are. And then I agree if it's a Q&A and it's more like you're a fly on the wall, like, you know, basically like this one where you're getting a bit of input, a bit of chat, a bit of banter, hopefully, then like it can be a little bit longer.
I feel like this is us going, see, we can answer questions succinctly.
Go, next one.
We kind of covered this question in the last one, but how do people overcome fears around filming content in public, mainly the gym?
Oh, I don't film in the gym.
I do.
Now and again, I'll like do a little bit of it. I feel a little bit like, no. The reason I say that is because you don't have to, right? Like it's okay not to if you don't want to. I don't do that for numerous reasons. One, I just don't really want to. Two, I don't have much time in the gym. So, you know, if I set up a camera to do a little, like, it cuts into the 20 minutes that I actually spend in the gym, and I'd rather just get in and out. Those are all my points.
I think, like you say, you don't have to do it, and that's a really important thing to keep in your head. It's not essential, but if you want to, and you want to, for example, film in the gym or film your training, start by justifying it as I'm checking my form, and you don't have to post any of it, but just experiment with checking your form with a camera and just be like, oh, that was a good set, that wasn't a great set, and you'll start to pick up on where to position your camera to kind of get the right angles to be able to see you as a whole rather than just your right arm as it's like flying in and out of shot. And I think it depends on what you're also depends on what you're filming, because gyms aren't exactly the best place for speaking content unless you've got a microphone. And I don't know about the three of you, but I've seen some terrible videos in gyms where someone's tried to do a talking reel without a microphone, and all you can hear is clanging and banging and music in the background. You can't actually hear what they're trying to say.
In which case, do a voiceover.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, you might as well have just done recorded your training.
Yeah. Also depends what time you go at. Like, don't, if you're nervous about recording content in the gym, don't go at 5 o'clock on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's...
I will not go into the gym at 5 o'clock on a Monday, no matter what. You couldn't pay me enough.
Sometimes I like the buzz of a busy gym.
Yeah, but you can't get on anything.
There's enough equipment to go around. But if it's a busy gym where you're like waiting for somebody to get off a machine, like, there's nothing worse, I think.
We have one lat pull down at our gym. One. Can you imagine how many people want to use a lat pull down at 5 p.m?
Mm.
Like, that's what? A no. Look, we can't all just do pull-ups like you, Emma. I'm just like, why doesn't everyone just jump on a pull-up bar?
Yeah, come on. Okay, next question.
Is there any way of creating editing reels quickly on a laptop rather than a phone? I'm going to say the phone is quicker.
Yeah, I downloaded CapCut for my laptop.
What's it like?
It's basically the same. It's kind of the same as your phone, or a little bit like more similar to iMovie. But I just hate fiddling around with shit on my phone.
I've been toying with the idea of doing CapCut on my laptop because I'm much the same. I don't like doing it on my phone, but I feel like on my phone's just really quick and easy.
Mm. Also, yeah. For some reason, I'm paying for the one on my laptop. I'm not paying for the one on my phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure what extra I'm even getting, but I had to have captions on or something. Mm.
How much is it?
$9.99 a month.
CapCut is definitely free on your laptop. I've had it for ages.
Yeah, but it wouldn't let me download with the caption that I used. I must have used like a pro caption or something.
Oh, I think so, yeah. I've used CapCut on the laptop a few times, but I suppose you have the faff of, it depends on what type of laptop and phone you have. Like, I suppose if they're both Apple, you could probably sync them up. Yeah, quickly. But if you don't, you have to upload the thing onto the laptop and then do all that faff, whereas you probably would have half of it edited by the time you did that. But yeah,
if you're recording like with like say you were cutting down a Zoom recording or something that's already on your laptop, like, because I wanted to use this camera because it's better than my phone.
Oh yeah, okay.
Mm.
But I think this person just means like regular reels. But anyway,
either or.
It's whatever you prefer. That's, some people love the laptop, other people just prefer the phone. No right or wrong answer. Right, this is kind of a long one. So, how to show value to potential client? I create over 24 total posts and reels a week, plus speak on stories, plus send newsletter 2 to 3 times a week. But I don't get any people inquiring to work with me. How do I get more leads in this case?
I'm going to be brutal.
See the content.
Bearing in mind, I don't know who this is, so this is not directed at anyone. But if you're putting out that much content and you're not getting people who want to work with you, and you've been doing that consistently for a period of time, your content might not be that good. as in like, I still don't know who that is, so it doesn't matter. As in, like, yeah, it either might not be directed at the right people, or you might not be doing, I mean, it could be as simple as, like, you're not doing any call to actions, but I'm assuming that you are. But when people are like, oh, you've got to do the reps, you've got to be consistent, there is a point of, you also have to consistently be doing the right things and hitting the right people in the right way with the right message. And that's not to say that every single post will hit, mine certainly don't. But some of them do, and then I double down on the ones that do. But if you've been doing that consistently for a period of time, like, there's something wrong. Much like, this is exactly the same principle as if you've got a client and a week in they're like, I've not lost any fat, let's drop my calories, you'd be like, absolutely not. But if they're like 8 weeks in, they're like, I've been consistently sticking to this for 8 weeks, then something needs to change because it's not working. What they're doing is not getting them the result that they want. What you're doing, that you've been doing it consistently and you're putting out enough, isn't getting you the result that you want. So you need to look at your messaging. There's no point, you know, there's no point, I don't know, dieting, but actually just eating at maintenance if you want to lose fat, right? So there needs to be some tweaking to happen. And it sounds like there's just a bit of tweaking. I mean, the good news is you've managed to get consistent putting out that amount of content. So that's like a habit that you formed, right? Much like you would say to one of your clients, like, you know, you formed all these habits. Now we just need to tweak to make sure if fat loss is your goal, you actually are creating a deficit and are getting that result. And if building your business is your goal, you actually are resonating with those people, having a decent enough call to action and actually getting into conversations and selling. Nothing to add?
I would just say, think about it. It's not just when we come to making content, it's not just about quantity. It's about the quality of it. Like, you could make half that amount of content, but if it's giving value, speaking to the right people, addressing their problem, not what you think is the problem, then it's going to have a much bigger impact. Like, so many people, probably every coach we know, and I've probably done it as well, puts out videos of how to improve your RDLs. Clients don't know that's a problem. And that's maybe not the actual problem they've got, but it's a piece of content. And people are like, well, why is nobody reacting to this? Because it's not actually solving anybody's problem.
Mm. Or it's a complete wrong problem. Like, yeah, put out loads of videos of me in the gym. Like, this is like another good reason. Like, I don't put out that many videos of me in the gym because it's fucking irrelevant to my coaching. Like, it's probably a little bit more relevant now that I talk a lot about, like, short, sharp workouts, and I probably could show some of them. But realistically, most of my coaching is around changing the way that you think about fat loss, right? Changing your mindset, improving your relationship with food. But that, like, seeing me correct an RDL in the gym has nothing to do with what I offer from a coaching perspective. So, like, why would I think that that is going to lead to people signing up for something totally different, you know?
Do you remember the days you could just post selfies of yourself? You didn't even really need a caption. You could just post a selfie, 30 hashtags, and you'd get hundreds of engagement.
Yeah.
Miss those days.
I mean, not hundreds of people signing up.
No.
But yeah, loads of engagement.
I mean, I threw up a photo of me when I was 17 last night, and it went wild with engagement.
Mm.
It was the last time I was drunk. So it's an entertaining photo. I'm wearing sunglasses indoors. I look like a right twat.
I think with this question, like, there has to be a disconnect somewhere, either what you're offering the people don't want, or people can't relate to you as a person. That's potentially it. And it's no harm asking the clients that you do have right now, like, what brought them to you, what content did they see, did they like, what did they resonate with, and kind of do more of that. But there has to be a disconnect somewhere. And
sometimes that disconnect comes from focusing too much on your insights, right? So, like, as an example, if I ask my clients why they came to me, a lot of the time it's like science-backed, or love it when you explain this, or blah blah blah. And then I'll look at my posts and I'm like, all of those really useful posts got fuck all likes and engagement, but that's why they signed up. And actually the ones that are like, I don't know, a tweet that, you know, like, keep being consistent and you'll get results, like, that got loads of likes, but probably not getting me any direct signups. Or like the picture of me, I don't know, here's me with my new girlfriend. I was like, oh, how nice of that. like, willing to bet if I put that up, it would get like 2,000 likes, which would probably be like the highest likes I've had this month. But would it get me any clients? No. Apart from gays love gays, so maybe. Maybe. But yeah, the point is, what are you sending me, James?
Yes, James.
Cool, got it.
What?
Doesn't matter, Emma.
Okay. Can we stop doing that? It's very distracting.
But, okay. Yeah, sorry, I very nearly went down the train of thought line again. And I was like, I'm not going to bring that up again.
What? Okay, next question.
Yeah, moving on.
Tips for catchy podcast captions. And then in brackets, do they even matter? For catchy podcast captions.
Does she mean titles?
I don't know. It says
captions. Sorry to assume gender might have been a male or non-binary person.
No, it's
I mean, if you closed your eyes and threw a dart at our member list, you'd probably land on a woman.
Yeah, true. But we don't like to assume.
Granted.
Terrible for the descriptions. I hardly put anything. And I literally just almost put the title again.
Yeah, I mean, this is where Fathom's quite useful. Because if you record stuff on Fathom, you can put stuff in terms of like timestamps. But
does anyone read, when you're consuming a podcast, do you read the show notes?
Never.
Sometimes.
Never. Sometimes I might go in for the timestamps. If it's a massively long one, I might go in if they're,
yeah,
but like if it's just, no, I'd never read the actual just description.
I'm with Maureen. I look for the timestamps. And particularly if I've not listened to anything that person's put out before. If I've not listened to anything that person's put out before and it's a long podcast, I'll look at the timestamps and be like, is there anything in here I'd even care about?
Mm. I only look at the title. I do think the title's very important. Mm. But I don't look at the description. And I also am very lazy with writing it. Like, I'll just put the ecmethod.co.uk and then not even really write what we've spoken about, partly because I can never really remember.
Yeah, but look at how many listens you get. Like, do you think, does it even matter? This is the whole point. Like, it probably doesn't make a difference. Like,
the one thing I think it is a little bit annoying that I haven't done that, although I don't think it comes up in the search anyway. It only comes up, like, I was looking for a podcast that we did and I couldn't find it. And often I get asked by people like, oh, you know, when you did an episode about, like, someone asked me yesterday, that episode you did about the Zoe diet. And I was like, yeah, I have no idea how I'd find that. And I'm not scrolling through all my own episodes. So, like, good luck. But I should have maybe named it better. So I think that's where titles are quite useful, because if people are looking for things, or if, you know, if they're like, oh, I wonder which one I should listen to, you want, like, something to jump out of them that's like a problem they may have. So I think that is very useful, but I don't think that the description even comes up in search. So if I'd put in the description covered the Zoe diet, I don't think if I searched it would come up anyway. It's just the title.
Probably for us and the person asking this question, it's probably not that important, because people will find their podcast via their social media as opposed to finding this person via Spotify. Like, they're probably going to find them from already knowing them. And you've probably said on your stories, this podcast is about X, Y, Z. We talked about this, that, and the other. Listen here.
But the cool thing about, like, SEO, like search optimization on, like, Spotify or something, is if I put in something that's quite, I don't know, somewhat unique, like, I don't know, maybe the Zoe diet had just come out and I wanted to know what people thought of it, and I put like Zoe diet debunked to see what other people have said, you might come up right at the top of that because it's being a search thing, even though you've not got many followers or not many listens or whatever, because you've named your podcast well. So people do search for things. Like, someone came to me once and they were like, do you know how I found you? I was putting in ESG, as in the environmental investment fund, for something to do with work, and your podcast came up and the title looked cool, so I just started listening to it, and then they signed up as a client. I was like, that's so random, but they were obviously searching for something else. But I've definitely put in things like, I don't know, if I was looking up, I can't even think of anything at the moment, but say I wanted to look up something, and I'm like, oh, someone might have done a podcast on thyroid issues. Parkour. Huh?
Parkour.
Parkour. Then I might put that in, and then like I'd see what came up, you know? And that, yeah, it might not necessarily be like a quote unquote big podcast. So I think if you title them well, and by well, you don't have to put too much thought into it. It just needs to be like what people think about what people will search. Comes back to Jules's point about like, you know, are you going to put in muscle protein synthesis, or are you going to put in building muscle? Depending on who your clients are, like if I was like, oh, I'm trying to boost, I don't know, if it was EIQ, I might put in protein synthesis. If it was for my EC method clients, I might put in building muscle, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a big question. Why do I feel like I can do everything alone and I find it hard to accept help?
Bad question for your therapist.
Well,
helpful answer.
Completely unqualified. Let me go. I don't know. Quite interesting. Why do you feel like you? Why do you struggle to accept help?
Mm-hmm. Why do
you see it? I think there's normally like an underlying. You think it's weakness, or you think accepting help means you can't do it yourself, or you're accepting you can't do it yourself, or you're giving in,
or you're worried. Or you're worried that someone else won't do as good a job as you would. And so you're struggling to let go of the reins.
Or you're worried that you won't be able to do the things that you're being asked to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think this question would go back to you as the person asking it. Of like, okay, well then, yeah, what is it that you're worried about if you let someone else help you?
And what specific task is it that you're asking for you're wanting help with? Like, is it a matter of reaching out to us? In which case, I would absolutely beg whoever asked this question to please ask whatever is on their mind.
Yeah, for example, this person I don't think has once said Anton in the group.
Interesting. Maybe it's, and the other thing, that could be so many reasons. Like, sometimes it's an ego thing. Of like, I feel like I should know the answer. Or is asking for help accepting that I don't? And when you kind of flip it around and think the other way of like, you literally have nothing to lose and everything to gain. Like you should always, I really like the frame of always being like, what can I learn from this person? There'll be something that everyone can teach you. Some people are a hell of a lot more than others, but there's always something someone can teach you. And when you flip it to, it's my job to figure out what they can teach me. Like if you start, even if you like made that a rule for a year, of everyone I come into contact with, I'm going to try and figure out what they can teach me. Like, you'll have so much knowledge by the end of even just 1 year that you wouldn't have never had before. So I don't know, I'd question why you're shut off to it, but I think it's a good question to ask, and it's a good thing that you've observed it in yourself, because that could genuinely change the whole direction of your life and your ability to grow as a business and a person. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Can you explain more of what's involved with posts that give value? I'm building up a functional training PT sessions, but would love to add some nutrition advice also.
Oh, should we talk in social media here?
I think so. Go on, James.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's got to be related to the person that you're trying to coach. Like if you're looking at functional PT sessions, you're probably looking at sports specific stuff, or you're probably looking at helping people move better. No.
So this person would consider herself to be a bit of a technophobe and is definitely helping people just to move better. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the thing is, it depends on what level you're looking at. Like if you're looking at people just moving better, then something really basic, like trying to, and this is something Jules talks about really well, is talking in the language of the person that you're trying to speak to. So not going in with, do you think you need to eat more protein? Because they haven't got a fucking clue that they need to eat more protein. it might be, do you find that you're struggling to recover after a training session? This might be why, and then move into the nutritional points that are going to help from that. But I think it's very much depends on where the clientele is actually already and to what level of they need to really focus on things. Like, do they need to be focusing on the minutiae of creatine and beta-alanine, for example, or do they just need to bring their protein up a little bit? Figure out what it is you think they need to do and then figure out how they would say it.
Yeah, I think you can pick a couple of big pillars, like, okay, let's base each meal around protein. Let's make sure you're getting this amount of sleep, and let's make sure you're, I don't know, increasing your activity levels to this. And then the way that you package it up to not make it sound shit is to be like, give me 30 days. Here's a tracker so you can track yourself doing it for 30 days. You're going to do these three habits. It is going to blow your mind how different you feel after doing these very simple three things consistently for a 30-day period. That's how you get buy-in from people. Because it's boring to be like, here, make these very small tweaks and then see how you feel. And people will do it for like a couple of days and then just not do it. Whereas if you give them something to hold them accountable and you kind of like, you're almost being like, let me prove to you, you know, like this is a bit of a challenge. Let's see if you can tick this off for 30 days. It's totally doable. They're all doable. The magic is in doing it consistently. And then you can have something that is quite basic and generic because everyone needs to do the basics. And realistically, if everyone did the basics, you would never need to make it more complicated anyway. But the skill is in like packaging up the basics in a way that people actually get excited about it and want to do them. Does that answer the question?
Kind of. I think for this, well, now that's because I know who the person is, but I think what she is trying to get across is like how to incorporate this into her social media. So I think sometimes as well, it can be helpful to kind of show what you have done yourself in the past or what you've done with other people to kind of display that. Now, this person is just starting from scratch. So it would be no harm, I think, for this person to maybe display what she has done to get to where she is now. That because people, she's targeting herself as an ideal client and people will be able to relate to what she's done.
And bring people into that. Be like, this is what I'm going to do for January or for the next 30 days. Here's my tracker. You can have it for free. Here's this and this. Let me prove to you that these basic things work. This is what I do. When you're, it's even better when you're in it. The amount of traction I get, and I don't think it's just because people want to do what you want to do, but it's because you live it and you breathe it. And it's way easier to talk about when it's actually you doing those things, going through it, having good days, having bad days, holding yourself accountable, and you feeling how it feels at each point as well. The content becomes a hell of a lot easier because you're actually doing the things that you say. And people buy into people that actually, you know, like practice what they preach.
And if this is someone who's a technophobe, a screenshot of your notes app is a brilliant way to do that. Like if you're wanting to communicate things in a text format that's easy to read, I think getting a screenshot of something in your notes
and
is a nice way to
use that to your advantage. Be like, I'm a technophobe. Like, I don't want to overcomplicate this stuff. I want to prove to you how these really simple, don't know, three things, you know, Emma's big three or whatever it's going to be. I'm going to prove to you how making this simple as hell, you don't need to download a million apps, you don't need to log into this or this. You're just going to be able to do it on your phone, tracking along each day, blah, blah, blah. Like, how are you going to do it? Like, whatever you're doing, I would try and use every nuance of it or every, like, even what you might see as like a disadvantage, like I'm a technophobe, use it to your advantage. Who else is a technophobe? Who else gets lost in all these like 50 different apps or tracking on a spreadsheet or blah, blah, blah? If you want very simple, here's where to focus your efforts to get results. This is what I'm here for. I'm no bullshit. Just want you to focus on these things. Like, live it, breathe it. It is you. It's your personality. That's what needs to come across. Now, if you're the opposite of that and you're like, oh, I made this really fancy, blah, 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 lean into that as well and be like, look how I've made it, and this is what's going to happen, and this is how you keep track, and this is why this part's important and this part's important, and that's why I've added in this feature. However you are, like, use that to your advantage. That's what's going to make you stand out and look different, rather than trying to recreate what someone else has done, which obviously isn't going to be as good because you don't like the tech side.
I also think things to give value don't have to always be educational. I think a lot of coaches get stuck in this, that every post has got to teach people something. And you say this all the time, Emma, people come to Instagram to be entertained. Like, if all you wanted was education, Instagram's not the place you're going to go to. So for a post to be valuable to someone, it could be funny, it could be inspirational, it could be building the community, it could be education. But for a post to be valuable to people, it doesn't need to be an educational post.
Mm. Okay, should we round up there? Because Maureen, we have another call.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the fourth call today with Maureen.
Lucky you.
I know. Yeah, oh, can I just share as well, speaking of tech genius, I've managed, you know, I was showing on Instagram the other day, I'd had like my commit to six spreadsheet and I'd set all their targets and then I'd import it to active campaigns and tag it to send out. Not anymore. The Google Sheets syncs into active campaigns on the hour, every hour, and then sends people their targets as I fill it in.
Oh,
you're Bill Gates now.
I know. Wait, does Bill, was he the computer guy?
Yeah, one of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Microsoft, one of the founders of Microsoft, yeah.
Okay, yeah, he could probably do that.
Did a really interesting podcast with Trevor Noah recently.
Who's that?
He's a South African comedian.
Hmm. It's a lot of political.
Really entertaining.
Good.
Yeah, there's a lot of political satire.
Hmm. Okay. That's all. I mean, if you've listened to this and think, I'd really like to join AFM, then head over to afmentors.com, fill in the application form, and I'll email you. All right, then.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.